is empty inside the 50 to Jay Schultz, and there is the siren. Thank God for Richmond as Jay Schultz has a quick kick at goal, and that is it. It's a big win to Port Adelaide. The big story is the casualty list at the Tigers. A number of injuries here, and Damien Hardwick, a lot to think about ahead of round one.
He does. It was Port Adelaide's night, though. 48-point win over the Tigers last night at the Docklands Stadium. Eddie had 13-15-93 to the Tigers. 1 super goal, 4 goals, 12-45. For Port, it rounds out a very neat pre-season competition. They've had some wins and some losses along the way and probably learned a hell of a lot. And the coach, Ken Hinckley, joins us in the studio this morning. Morning, Ken.
Thanks for having me.
Are you glad that's over, that the pre-season now?
Well, 10 days ago, I probably wasn't as glad that it was over because we, you know, we'd had a disappointing performance in the second half against a really strong Melbourne. So, you know, we were glad to get through last night and play the way we did and give ourselves a chance and build some confidence going through the, you know, what about a 17-day break. So there's still a bit of training to do for the boys. So it's still a bit of a risky time.
What about the competition itself, Ken? Damien Hardwick said last night that he wanted to stop the game towards the end because of injuries. But the validity of the three NAB Cup games, is that the right number? Is it the right system, or should there be more emphasis or more onus put on onto the matches to play for at least something, so you're getting something out of the game rather than just injuries?
Yeah, look, personally, I believe three is too many and don't need three to get ready. I mean, most clubs throughout the whole competition have used one of those games to field a really inexperienced side.
Yep.
And then the other times we've put together predominantly our most senior players who are recovering from some injury or game times needed for them. So we've managed it, I think, based around two games.
Yep.
And I think probably it's about the right build-up for us. You play so much practice match football now, or match simulation football, or match scenario. They're all the words that us coaches use to tell you we're playing football.
Are you saying you can almost prepare in-house for a season ahead without having to play opposition clubs?
Yeah, well, your challenge is you can get to do plenty of the combative stuff. You can get to do plenty of structure stuff. The thing you can't do is go game style against game style. Will it stand up? So you want to test that out a little bit. And, you know, if you've got it wrong by end of February, March, it's probably not fixable. It's recoverable to a point, but not fixable, because if you've put all your effort for 5 months into one part of the game that you want to play in and it doesn't look like it can cope, well, that's a bit of a worry.
Do you reckon the club's more organised if you didn't play any practice matches? If you came in cold and you just hadn't your combative work against one another, how do you reckon it'd go in the first month of footy? Do you reckon it'd be full on, or do you reckon there'd be a gap between the better sides and the poorer sides?
No, I reckon it'd be flat out. Anything could happen. There could be a couple of surprises, you know, all those sorts of things. But I don't think the competition would be drastically affected by it, in my view. Does it give you an opportunity to play three more games? Does it mean instead of playing five teams twice, you're playing eight teams twice? All of a sudden, you're getting closer to an even draw. Every second year, you play every team twice. It sounds a bit easier than at the moment that we play every third or fourth year, we might play every team twice, and in some cases, it's longer.
Damien Hardwick said last night that he asked the AFL if they could call the game off towards the end. If you're in Damien's shoes, you've got four players off the ground, you've got 15 on the ground against 18, would you have asked the same question?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a hard one because you don't sit in that seat.
Yep.
I can totally understand Dim is getting ready for round one. I think from a game point of view and respecting the game as much as I would like to, I think if I've got 17 or 18 fit players, I would be out there on the ground with them and say, look, you know what, this is not ideal, but just hang in there, play the game out. Just control yourself a little bit more than you would normally, but just purely from outside and looking at the game, I think you'd probably like to leave the numbers there, but you know, there's a coach that's just had a midfielder, you know, an outside mid, he's had all sorts of a hamstring, a concussion.
Yep.
He's sitting there going, mate, I just need to get out of this.
Before somebody else goes down. If we look back to last year and your review of last season, what was the main thing that came out of that for you? Because the expectation was that 2015 was going to be, you know, another step up from an exciting 2014. What was the missing ingredient in your eyes?
Yeah, I think we fundamentally failed at the key and crucial moments of the season. You know, we played the top six teams on the ladder as they finished 2015, the first six rounds. So you played that first up.
Pretty straight up measuring stick, isn't it?
Well, you go, you get through that okay at 3-3. And you go, okay, we're going okay. What effect has that had on you going into the next part of the draw? Because subconsciously, you do look at that as a player, and I'm sure, and as a coach, and you go, all right, that block's a relief. It's done. Not too much damage done. Now we've got to make the most of the next block. Whether you have the same intensity, people say, well, that's your job to make sure the intensity's right. Players intend to do what they need to do. but it happens a little bit. You drop off, and you know, you're reminded every week you drop off a little bit in AFL football, you end up losing.
Yeah, you've made some changes too, and Charlie Dixon made his debut last night. What did you think of Charlie's performance?
Yeah, I love the way he came on the ground. I love the way he went about it. You'd love the way he plays. He's just a big man who wants to get the footy as much as he can, and he does like getting people out of his way, which is what we like. And then his teammates know how to react off him. Look, they've trained with him all summer, and to be fair, they've been pretty excited, and they've been rubbing their hands together. Not so much he's going to mark the ball 50 times in our front half.
That's the presence, isn't it?
Hang on a second. This bloke's 200 centimetres, he's 108 kilos, and he's got genuine aggression. That's going to be handy.
Yep.
Footy Show was reporting last night that you had to counsel him about his off-field behaviour, or just provide some, you know, direct guidance about what's expected of him. What happened there?
Now, one of my responsibilities to Charlie when he made the decision to come down here was to provide him with good love, you know, and sometimes is to get him to understand some of the decisions that he makes and still makes are not the right types of decisions that he wants to consistently make. And he's learning. I said right from the start, Charlie coming here was going to be about him learning lots of things about himself, the person, and hopefully a lot of things about himself, the footballer. My responsibility to him and his family is to make sure I don't miss the opportunity to help educate him what a good person looks like away from the football club, the opportunities you get to do a lot of good things, and you eliminate some of the not so good things that you don't need to talk about.
So that's where he's at the moment. In terms of, you know, just generally with players, it's so high pressured, and we know that demands on footballers are enormous, and finding that balance can be difficult individual to individual. You give them 3 days off as of now. What's your message to the players as they go away for 3 days?
Oh, it's pretty fresh in my mind because it was only about 10 hours ago. It was go away, have a spell. You deserve it. You've worked really, really hard in the summer. You know you've got an AFL season to come up. You can't abuse yourself. Look after yourself. Doesn't mean you can't socialise. Can't go out for dinner and have, you know, a few drinks together. I would have said to the boys, you know, if it's a night out, it's one night out with really close mates where you do relax a bit. But more often than not, we're still getting ready for AFL football. I think as a club, particularly me, I've been able to have a slight balancing of to what I think you need to be to play AFL football now mentally, and I think hopefully as a club the boys recognise that, and we're giving them some opportunity to make some choices, and so far their choices have been really balanced ones.
How hard is it in Adelaide? For those that have never lived there or worked there or played footy there, how hard is it for the boys to actually go out socially and fit in and not be on the front page of the paper the next morning?
It's impossible.
Yeah.
They just don't do it. Well, they just can't do it. And if they do, they're potentially doing 3 times worse than they were doing, or they're doing 5 times better than they were doing. So
pretty suffocating.
Yeah, it is, but it's we love Adelaide, and we love being a part of a real mad footy state. As you know, in Melbourne, you get an opportunity.
Yeah, it's
a footy state. So Vossie came across to us. One of the key reasons he came was he wanted to live and breathe a footy state. Now, he acknowledges that sometimes it becomes tiring, but it is great to wake up on Monday and start talking footy and get through the whole week, and by the end of the week the footy's turned into what happened to what are we going to do, and it's, you know, it's pretty fair. Players, I don't think players can say they don't know what to expect.
Ken Hinckley's with us here on Breakfast with Frank and Ox. It's 16 minutes past 7, the coach of the Port Adelaide Football Club after last night's win over the Tigers in NAB number 3.
It's been a really sad week for you, Ken, and for the Geelong Footy Club with the passing of Paul Couch. You played in a grand final with Paul. You obviously were very close to him. When news of that comes through, because you also had an episode with Cripper, Jason Cripps, who nearly suffered the same fate whilst exercising, does it make you reflect and just the moment that news got to you about Paul Couch passing?
Yeah, look, it's been to be fair, Ox, let's start with Couch. An absolute tragedy for Geraldine, 4 kids. I've got kids the same age as Geraldine and Paul, and, you know, he was waking up good as gold, ready to go for a bike ride. You don't expect any of that stuff, obviously, to go on in life. It just tells you, make the most of it for me.
Yep.
Make every day count. Tell your loved ones you love them, all those sorts of things, because that's the sum of the things you worry about. Imagine that happening and you haven't quite ticked off the things you need to tick off. And look, it's just a terrible time for anyone to get involved with. And as footy done to us a bit, or done certainly done to our club a little bit over the last 4 to 5 years, we've lost J-Mac. You know, we've lost Phil Walsh last year. We nearly lost Jason Cripps last year. And then Paul Couch, it just seems to be, I don't know, it just seems to be coming too real a little bit at the moment. But, man, my advice to everyone is make the most of the time we've got. Enjoy the oxygen going in, because they're going to stop it from some stage.
Do you talk to your players about it? Is that something you sit down and discuss with them?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think you have to actually talk about to help healing for people.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine last year with Phil for us and, you know, Cripper and, you know, and the boys had J-Mac before my time. So there needs to be, and people handle it differently, but there definitely needs to be some counselling and help time spent on healing and understand, because that's the battle. You go, how does that happen?
Yeah.
But you don't go looking for the answer. Just be there for the support people, I think, and do your absolute best, because it's a terrible time.
Ken, how are you managing things with your relationship with Paddy Ryder and Angus Monfries, given that they've got to stay away from the club and you can have minimal contact with them in certain contexts, and wanting to keep them still in the tent? What do you do?
Yeah, well, you eliminate the tent. That's the first thing I've done. I've just said, no tent. I'm not going to be not one conversation am I going to have about your boys. You know I care about you.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure you're going okay.
Are they going okay?
Yeah, they are going reasonably okay. I think their biggest hit's coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's round footy one. Season, yep. It's when they can't go out and play, and, you know, they're watching at the moment. Last year they sat out the whole NAB Cup anyhow because of this same situation that they were put into, and they've got another 6 months to go, unfortunately, and it'll be a bit more difficult for them. I think welfare is the key ingredient. The boys, in my view, and this is just my view, the boys didn't do anything wrong, and they certainly shouldn't have expected to be suspended like they were. But there's rules in place in the world, and if you're going to have those rules in place, you've got to make sure the fine detail's absolutely fine.
Talking about rules, there's been a change to the protected area. As a coach, have you been doing a fair bit on that during training, or is it just another one that you tell the players about and they just actually work it out?
Yeah, you give them some awareness, you give them some little clues, I reckon, and you point out the availabilities to them. You know, there's opportunities for you to use this space this way, and this way if you want it. But the negative is you've got to defend it like this, this, and this too.
I was watching last night, and I love watching Ollie Wines, and a lot of people do. He's just a bull. How big is he going to get? Because he's still only a colt. He's still got, I reckon, years of growth left in him. But he's just a monster. Is he?
He's 21. Yeah.
And he's enormous. I can see the smile on your face. You must really enjoy coaching him.
The good things about Ollie, he wants to be a fantastic teammate.
Yep.
He wants to give his absolute all to the team, and he does not want to leave a stone unturned to prepare to do that now.
The perfect student.
What more can you want? You know, and Ollie was pissed off with his last performance against Melbourne, and last night he responds the way he did. You know, he's a pretty special player.
Just to finish, Adam Simpson was talking about leaving the rules alone. He wants the rules just to be set in stone for a little while. Lee Matthews was interesting. He came out and said, but if we do that, the coaches will look for a way to push the boundaries, to tinker, to get an advantage. So for every action, there's got to be an equal and opposite reaction, and therefore we've got changes to the rules. What's your philosophy on that?
Yeah, I think let's talk about them. Talk about what makes our game better is okay to talk about it. Make sure it does make our game better and doesn't influence some other part. And if we think that's a genuine tick amongst the right people who have got a lot of love for the game, I think we can't get it too far wrong. But like Adam, you don't want our game having four rule changes every year and then try to adjust to it. I think if there's a tinker here and there, because it's an obvious, like it's been there for 5 years, you know what, we could fix this by doing that.
If there's one thing you could fix, what would it be?
Interpretation of deliberate out and bounds on the full, I would have thought, because I've got no idea after last night.
It's pretty difficult. Last one from a selfish point of view. The game against Melbourne. Are you expecting Melbourne to improve?
Yeah, I do, absolutely. I think they've backed that up against the Bulldogs. I think you don't get that much talent in your door and have that many good people at your football club that you can't get your chance to come through. You've got to have a run with injuries. You've got to have some stability around the key people, and you've just got to continue to work really, really hard day in, day out, particularly in the early years where you're not sure you're going to get there. But I can guarantee you, having been base level camp a few times.
Yep.
The climb. Once you get to the climb, it gets going. It can climb pretty quick.
Good on you, Ken. Well, and many people expecting Port Adelaide to make another attempt on the summit again this year. Thanks for coming in, and good luck with the season ahead. Do you get a couple of days off as well?
I got a media day here in Melbourne today.
And there's not a day off.
I've got other personal stuff that's got to be done, unfortunately, now, but that's okay. They worked out all right. Saturday and Sunday's a good day.
Well, enjoy, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, boys.
Ken Hinckley, coach of Port Adelaide Football Club. PortAdelaideFC.com.au to become a member for 2016. Plenty of great deals for Victorian fans, and they are playing here throughout the campaign.